Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening. Welcome to Gather Round. I'm Rosanna Marcevio, also known as Ra. And tonight we have Peepaw with Monique Johnson, Charlie Frost coming in, and we're talking about some of the different things over the years that the U.S. government has done to its citizens, citizens not being aware of it at the time anyway. And in our second hour, it's for Palestine. So Raymond Blaine will be here and Sarit Jacobson then. But right now, we're going to have to go to a pre-recorded tea talk with Monique. She is suffering from a lot of sinus problems right now. So this was recorded about 2 months ago. And this tea talk is, what is an empath?
Welcome. This morning's talk is going to be on being an empath or having empathy. The definition as how I am going to use this and the way you will find it if you research it in more of a metaphysical type of way, sympathy, on the other hand, is more like for my tea talks, the definition for that is going to be feeling sorry or feeling bad for another person's experience. But empath is actually feeling that person's or external person's emotions inside of your own being. So, how does that come out? Have you ever went into a room and immediately upon going into a room or a meeting or even like going into work sometimes, there's a prevailing energy. So like a lot of times ones have experienced, they can walk into a room and it's like, man, even though no one maybe even looks at them, but they can feel that everyone in the room or the majority of people in the room, the energy that's prevailing is like sad or, and they don't see anyone crying or anything. They can just feel that there is sadness there. Or, this is one way I begin to understand how I can feel an external energy inside of me. When I walk into, I work out at sometimes at an activity center, and I can walk into a room, and I'm sure others do too, and kind of have the energy of what class was in that room before, even if I don't see people walking out. If it was a dance class or a Zumba class, an activity class, then I walk in a room and the energy is still like buzzing. And if it maybe was a yoga class, not a vigorous yoga class, but more of a calming yoga class, then the energy may be more calm. So those are different examples how the average person kind of becomes aware of this empath thing. So let's dive deeper. As you begin to clear your chakra energies, as you begin to expand in your awareness, you may become aware that you have a lot of empathy in you. How that may show up is that you may even begin to feel like if there's a prevailing energy in your own home, you know, like let's say you have quite a few kids and they've been arguing all the time and, you know, all day or whatever. And all of a sudden the husband comes home and you yourself starts to argue with the husband. And it actually can be because the prevailing energy you have been soaking in has been that argument energy all day. And so that energy really has absorbed. And if you are not aware or conscious, then you can just propel that energy out of you as well and keep that energy going. As you become more aware, you become more able to understand when you are feeling an energy that is not necessarily originating from you. Okay? So how does that look? As I became more aware and expansive and released a lot of the emotional baggage that we go through in the chakra clearings, in the chakra classes, I released quite a bit of those, then my capacity to feel and to understand my feelings and my emotions grew. It expanded with that as well. So for one that I was, I will go into the present tense now. I'm sorry, it's like the tenses with these that I don't know why that has a hard time with me sometimes in these tea talks. And I think that's because these are not linear tea talks. So the past, present, perfect, and all that gets mixed up. So I'm going to keep going. Okay, so get back. So. Another way, before I move forward, another way that you may be able to understand that you have your ability or your connection to empathy or being an empath is that a lot of times moms, even dads, feel it with their kids. So my first really strong empath sense came with my daughter to where I could feel when she needed me or when she was, when something happened, you know, if she was startled or went into deep fear or even, things that were kind to her and stuff I didn't always feel. But if she needed something, I could feel her. Now, that goes into soul call, and we'll go back to that later. We're staying with empath. So, if there's a prevailing energy that you marinate in at your work, you can take that, you can begin to unknowingly take that energy home and work from that energy. I have a friend that they are they give a lot to a lot of causes. Live in a country that is a prevailing one type of energy of fear and manipulation, and it's more of a third world country, and there's a lot of sadness in that country, and even though that person is not necessarily innately a sad person and depressed person, they have to struggle to stay happy because the prevailing energy in the whole country is one kind of depressed way of experiencing life. So those are different examples of empaths. Why would you even care? Why would you even want to know? Think about it this way. As you expand and clear your emotional baggage and your energy starts running more freely, flowing freely through you, you become more aware of picking up external energies. If you begin to absorb and act from an energy that is not resonates with you, that is not yours, you begin to understand that. Okay, so how does that look? Well, for me, I just had this experience yet again yesterday. That's one of the reasons why I didn't do a tea talk, because I had to ground myself and try to release that before I came and recorded anything for y'all. So how did that look? My natural state in this, where I am in life, my natural state is to be happy. My life is really happy. I experience most things in happiness, because that is the umbrella of, I guess, my intention in life, is to have peace and happiness and no unnecessary drama. Yesterday, day before, and Monday and Tuesday, I had an overwhelming sense of that. I don't really have have a word that actually describes the emotion totally, but it was a depressed energy. It was down. It was a little hopeless, a little that. And so it's been a long time since I have had to be aware of being an empath. A high-level empath can even begin to pick up the energy of the world, pick up the energy and experience within their own being the emotional energy of the ones they're connected to, either consciously or unconsciously, the prevailing energy of a society, of a world, or, you know, so it can start with one person and it can go as wide as the world itself. And so being conscious of this, when that kind of overtakes the energy being, when it overtook me these last 2 days, I had to get back conscious of, hold on, this is not mine. When you understand that there is nothing in your journey of life, in my home, nothing really had changed, you know, I couldn't, since nothing in my home had changed or in my life had changed to kind of trigger that type of emotion, then I'm able to say, okay, Monique, then maybe this is not yours. Are you picking it up from someone else? When I begin to pick up and become higher and higher level empath, the thing that I need to do in order to find my center is to ground myself a bit more. Does that make sense? Because I am all out here and I'm picking up all the energy and emotions of those that are around me and I'm experiencing them from my own inner being, I have an option to act out into my world as if that emotion is mine and as if it is something that's originating from self. Or if I know it is not, if I understand the concept of being an empath and when that is kicking in for me, then I can realize this is not something that has grown from my own experience of life in this moment. Therefore, if that is true, then there's nothing I need to change in my life to fix that downness, that depression, that ick that's set in. However, if I know it's outside of me, then there is something I can do. I can ground myself, and that begins to kind of release some of that that emotion that is coming in. If I ground myself in my current state, in my current being, ground myself here, then I don't necessarily have to deal with as much of the ick that may can come in from outside. And it's not always ick. Sometimes it's love. And if it's love, then it's like, shoot, outside, inside, don't matter. I embrace love. True love. Not expectation, obligation, mine love, but true, pure love that's unconditional. When that comes in towards you, you just embrace it because it's a gift from the universe. Is there anything else? So, as you go through, so I'm starting up the energy tutorials and things. As you go through those with me, I'm also going to be doing some of these more expansive tea talks. I'm going to continue to do those because we're all at different levels of expansion. Our awareness is at different levels, and we may need to have reminders and focus on certain things, just like I needed a reminder Monday and Tuesday about the empath thing because my first inclination didn't automatically pick up that it wasn't mine. But when I remembered, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, this is just an empath thing. So if you want to know a little bit more about empath, feel free to connect to me on Facebook. I have a note on what is an empath. I think that's it. So we'll be going through the chakras soon. I'll be starting that class up next week. Make sure you have signed up at least on the website because somehow I am going to get a somehow it's going to include one of the chakra questionnaires so you can kind of understand what is your dominant chakra. And then as we work through those and clear some of them up, you get a better understanding of yourself. So,
So Monique can be found at T-Talks with Monique, that's M-O-N-I-E-K, Johnson, on Blog Talk. And she has several things going there. And it's really worth watching. Also, healthymovementsinternational.com is her website. So we'll be back and we will have Charlie with us. To Rainbow as we wait for Charlie Frost to get here. Well, we seem to be having some issues with Charlie getting in here on Skype. I'm going to try to call him. So, we have another song. We've got Charlie Frost with us. Hi, Charlie.
Hello. Can you hear me, Ruth?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. Well, sorry that, we missed 5 minutes, but hey, we're good to go. We're going to talk a bit about some of the things that the U.S. government is doing to its citizens and has been doing for years and years and years.
Decades, yeah, quite some time now.
Yeah. Why don't you just give us a little background on yourself? I know you were in the service. And how did that happen? I mean, now that you're doing all this research, did that start then? Or, you know, see something in the service that made you become more skeptical? What happened? How did you get started?
All right. I've spent 5.5 years in the United States Armed Forces. I initially had went in under infantry. During my stay in, I mean, you know, beforehand, I had always been one to question any and everything. And gradually and accumulatively throughout my time of being in the service, I found myself questioning and questioning more and more what I saw taking place and transpiring right in front of my eyes. From, you know, orders being passed down and individuals following blindly and just doing, adhering to what their chain of command had stated. So it not only did it, you know, fuel the fire, if you will, to my already extensive questioning of everything and anything. Yeah. So it made it even more, I guess, politically aimed, I guess, if you would say, or, you know, I like I said, I've always questioned every and anything because you can never have too much knowledge. And if an individual says so, you know, they're full of shit.
Well, let me ask you, why did you join the service anyway? Can you remember what your reasoning was?
Oh, yeah, I can remember. Yeah, I can remember like it was yesterday, honestly. I was one of the few that was given the opportunity to look at prison or, you know.
Okay.
But see, this is the thing, though. It wasn't as if, you know, I had any form of extremely violent charges or... It wasn't like I was moving pounds upon pounds of narcotics across state lines or anything. It just happened to be accumulation of, you know, like public intox or under the influence, under age, etc. Well, they had continuously stacked up until the time that I was given the opportunity. They were like, well, you could go to the Army for 6 years or we're going to put you in prison for one. I was like, you know, I'm going to go with the Army.
Yeah. Yeah, I really didn't realize that they still did. I mean, I used to hear tales about that, you know, they gave me a choice. But so they're still doing it. Well,
oh, yeah. Yeah, it's under the radar, though. It's definitely under the radar.
Okay, that's, yeah. When you were in there, did you meet other men or men and women who were doing... some of this looking to who were more skeptical as you are and starting to search?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I ran into numerous individuals that, you know, would question as much as, excuse me, as much as myself would as far as the chain of command. I mean, you know, chain of command goes all the way up to the President of the United States because when you are in, that is your commander-in-chief. That is the one that... in theory, is where you get all of your orders from. It just gradually gets disseminated and trickled down through every piece or individual that is directly above you. So when you have somebody that's calling the shots or, you know, making calls on certain principle or objectives or certain scenarios or situations, you know what I'm saying? When it comes down to a question of moral, is it morally right or is it not? I mean, you're going to have the individuals that don't blindly follow questioning whether or not we should or should not do this. And then that just spawns a whole nother stream of questions as to why we are doing what it is that we're doing.
Right. And they do not like questions. I've
oh no.
Not part of it. You are supposed to blindly follow. This is what they want. So then when you got out, you had, well, not necessarily more time, but you could arrange your time more on your own. So you have just been doing extensive research. Does it make you ill sometimes? I mean, I only ask that, maybe that's just a girly question, but I mean, it does me. When I read these things, I just get ill.
Oh, no, I'm right there. I'm right there with you. It does. It's sickening to see and know what our armed forces, not only, you know, the men and women that make up our armed forces. I mean, like I said earlier, they're a lot of the ones that are blindly following. So you can't really push or pass blame onto them, as opposed to the higher-ups that are the ones, you know, distributing this information or intel or the orders or guidelines that are coming down. So when it comes to somebody telling you to do this or do that, you know, you have the bottom of the totem pole, if you will, that is just doing and taking care of it. But then, you know, you kind of have the question, like, why, when, or where did it become okay for these individuals that are, we'll just call them the powers that be, you know, that made it okay for this type of order or actions to be passed down, to be taken out? Like, when, and it is, it's very sickening to know some of the stuff that even myself, I had to do. And I mean, you know, if you look at, say, a large operation like what took place in Iraq, okay, the majority of the mass populace's knowledge is, you know, we were over there looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Oh.
Let's be serious.
Yeah.
Okay. We never found anything. And I mean, we did. We searched up and, you know, high and low, far and, we did massive amounts of searches to try to find these supposed weapons of mass destruction. We found nothing. But at the same time, you know, there have been instances where we had, I don't want to get sidetracked, Ruthann. I mean, if you want to go into this, you know.
Well, no, but I mean, it's just, so you're saying that a lot of the military people are pretty much brainwashed. And so they just go ahead. They do what they're told.
Exactly. And that's what it is. It's indoctrination and a lot of conditioning. Definitely. Right.
Sure. But now we're going to talk about some of the things that happened. And it would probably be the military that did it, but like on the little different grounds, like not in other countries. Starting back in the 30s, there's a site. I want to tell people that you can find it on several different sites, but there's one that takes you back. It like starts in the 1930 something with
I might have that site, actually.
Let me see. I'm trying to find it too, because there's several that have
it's
this.
It's a whole list. It's a roundabout and or rough.
Well, this is one. Okay, HTTP / rense, RENSE.com/general36/history, and that takes you right out to starting in 1931, where the Rockefeller Institute, of course Rockefeller, our friend Evan would love this. For medical investigations, they infected human subjects with cancer cells. So right from there on, you know, I mean, he was rewarded all along the way. He was the one who established the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Facilities, and he was named to the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission. So, you know, he, on civilians and soldiers, was doing experiments with radiation.
Yeah, the isotopes and whatnot. And I want to point out that when you go, if any of the listeners or followers go to this website, the first name that you see pop up is Dr. Cornelius Rhodes, also known as Dr. Cornelius Packer Dusty Rhodes. And his name has came up in a lot of my research when it comes to anything having to do with radiological experiments.
I didn't know that is Dusty. This Cornelius Rhodes is Dusty?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, see, that's how, the rabbit hole gets deeper.
Yeah, that's, oh, God. Now, I think a lot of people have heard about the Tuskegee syphilis study. You want to tell us a little bit about that? That was just absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, it was. I think all of the whistleblowers, all of the individuals throughout the community that have continuously brought this to mainstream media's attention and the populace's attention, the Tuskegee experiments had taken place during the early 30s. It was a study on syphilis where they took a couple hundred black men, which, you know, the African-American population, early army, you know, they're even under what you would consider your standard private.
Right.
Because they're black, which is even more, excuse my language, but fucked up than you would anticipate.
Right.
But
no, true.
they took 200 or more black men and, you know, infected them with the syphilis virus. And given, at the time, there was a... what's the word I'm looking for? An antibody or a vaccination or a cure, if you would, to take care of this syphilis disease. But the military, the powers that be, what have you, had continued to tell these families of these individuals, these soldiers, that, you know, they had no idea what was going on, et cetera. There was nothing wrong with them. They fed them lie after lie.
That's it. They told them, they never told them what they had.
Oh, that they, too, yeah. And to monitor, so that they could monitor the progression of syphilis in an unvaccinated, they had a cure, but they refused to give it to,
right.
There was no
treatment, right.
To watch the disease progress and see what it would do to the human body throughout the course of this infection until, you know, the imminent demise of every individual that was infected with this disease. Which, I mean, come on now, why would we be willingly? Like I said, Ruthie, this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the human experimentation from...
Yeah. Well, they've done so many things. I mean, like that. That was just like totally knowing what they had, denying treatment, denying to the families, well, to the men that they had anything wrong, denying to the families. Something else that we have heard about, I'm going to talk about this, and then I want you to talk about some of the things that maybe we've not heard so much about, but a lot of us have heard about the spraying that went on in Lewis. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
In St. Louis, there was a housing complex known as the Pruitt-Igoe housing complex. It was a 57-acre, 11-story. It housed 85,000 families. So at the time that it was built, it was enormous. I mean, you know, the time that it was built, we're talking early 1900s. I mean, so, you know, a housing complex that housed that many individuals was just, I mean, you know, immense.
It was old then. I mean, not old, but it was, it had been around a while then when they started doing this stuff in the 50s or so.
Yeah, it initially, I think, was built in the, like I said, the early 1900s. I don't have a specific date for it, but yeah, the sprays and everything that had came down, like, this is another thing that boggles my mind. This housing complex was notorious and associated with, you know, a lot of crime and the same thing that's associated with any type of housing complex that's minority. Right. Like Phil, right. Et cetera. So they did the same thing. They took and set up these isotope sprayers with let me search through my notes. It was some form of radiation that was, I want to say it was a, let me look, a Knights, it was something Knights building, but they had sprayed this entire population of the housing complex with radioactive isotopes with the regards of, you know, trying to figure out what this type of radioaction did to individuals, etc. And the ploy that, because there was a few people that had caught on to what the military was doing, so they started to question it. And the response from the military was, well, what we're doing is putting up some type of mechanism to cause a blackout, if you will, from the sky so that the Russians can't see this area if they were to try to bomb it. Yeah, that's what they told.
What a lame, reason given. I mean, that was too absurd.
Right, we're here in one city, little St. Louis in middle America, which, let's be serious, intercontinental ballistic missiles, if you're talking about coming from either coast, west or east, the likelihood of them hitting something in the middle of America without any type of notification, awareness, or knowledge of is, you know, outlandish.
I mean, in St. Louis, and I'm not knocking St. Louis at all, but if they're going to hit something in the middle of the country, they're going to hit Chicago.
One of the major
city, and something that is like a power hub.
Yeah, definitely.
But people, you know, when you believe the government, you know, when you trust, and you ask the question, and they tell you that, you think, well, okay, maybe, yeah.
But, you know, here's another thing that I ran across, Ruth. The same individual, Minoru Yamasaki, the same individual that created and developed this Pruitt Eagle housing complex in St. Louis was the same individual that designed the Twin Towers in New York.
Shit, Charlie. Really?
Yes, the same individual that created this housing complex.
You mean the one who did... Now, he couldn't have done the housing thing and then the towers because he would have been dead. But you mean like...
He did. No. Yes. No. Well, he designed. He designed both the Pruitt Eagle housing complex that was sprayed. He created the housing complex, and he was the one that designed the World Trade Centers.
Yeah, we're going to have to find out when that Pruitt thing, because if it was like 1900, there's no way that he designed it and did the Trade Center.
Right,
so it must have been a little longer.
The Pruitt,
higher up to 1900.
I want to say it was like 1930, 1940, honestly.
Oh, okay. Well, then, so that wasn't even there early. That was, because they started this.
Yeah, about mid. Yeah.
St. Louis thing. The St. Louis, it was called the Manhattan Project in St. Louis. It was called Manhattan Rochester.
Manhattan Rochester Project.
They sprayed in 53-54, and then also evidently in 63-65. But they were experimenting or testing people from the 1945 to 1970, because they were testing people before.
Oh, yeah.
And then during and then after to see the, like, longer-term
results. And do you want to know another crazy thing? The whole spraying in St. Louis, there was actually something going on at the exact same time. There was a textile company that was using some form of paint.
Oh.
And yeah. The company was U.S. Radium. They operated in Orange, New Jersey in the early 1900s, but they produced a radioactive powder paint, and it was administered amongst many a things, textiles being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the people that they did, that, you know, handled these paints or painted these textiles, everything, you know, it killed a lot of people. But this is the thing, that nobody connects all of the dots. Like, they see one occurrence here, they see one occurrence here, and then they just leave them separated. But, you know, if you take a look at it as a whole, I mean, everything and anything that happened in America at this time is like, wow, how could not more people pay attention to, or, you know?
Well, you know what, Charlie? I think a good analogy is before computers, and even since computers, sometimes it happens, but in the law enforcement business, you know, over here in this county, you have this guy who's killed a couple people, and they get him for that. But the very same method was done three states away, where it turns out it was him, but they never got that, and he killed, like, who knows, three or four people with the same method. But because the law, they didn't have everything computerized, they never cross-checked if they didn't have a reason. If they didn't know that he had lived there, they would never call the cops in that area and say, hey, did you ever have?
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing. So it's just going on everywhere, but for just regular people, there was no way that we would even have a clue. And besides, people were still trusting the government. So they didn't. Well, now, didn't they do something similar in Texas, the same kind of stuff they sprayed in St. Louis? But didn't in Texas, they did it with airplanes or something, I think?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. San Antonio. I'm searching through all my notes right now. I can't find it per se, but excuse me. They did the exact same thing in San Antonio. There is actually one of the few written reports and or, you know, paper trail reports, if you will, that state that the United States Air, I want to say it was Air Force, had these types of chemical sprayers, if you will, in planes, and they were doing it, they were spraying certain communities over and around the San Antonio community. I know when I was in the Army, there's a military base just outside of San Antonio called McLean, I can't quite remember which one it is, but it is an Air Force base. And, you know, 90% of Air Force bases are closely related to any form of Army base.
Sure.
So it wouldn't be that hard to, you know, come to terms with the fact that it is a... Let me see if I can't find that real fit.
Well, let me talk about something that struck me was in Chicago, they infected 400 prisoners with malaria because they wanted to study different kinds of experimental drugs. And that was like in the early, I think it was 1940 maybe. And later, the Nazi doctors on trial cited this, trying to defend their own actions during the Holocaust. So I found that quite interesting, that they used American studies, what the Americans did, to try to defend themselves. But something else, I thought, man, you talk about poor people who actually have firm moral beliefs, the Seventh-day Adventists, you know, that they won't do active duty. And so there, 4,000 of them, approximately, were experimented on with mustard gas because, well, they had a choice. They could either be guinea pigs or serve on active duty. And
oh,
so
wow.
So that, I mean, you know, things like that, just, it's horrid, the things that they've done to, you know.
Yeah, and it continues, and it continues to take place. And that's what's so bothersome, is that, you know what I'm saying, let's just take into consideration the fact that I just sent you two things, Ruthann. But let's just take into consideration the same thing that took place in the early 1900s, 1930s, 1940s, at the Pruitt-Igoe housing complex, with the military. I got caught setting up things to make, you know.
Yeah,
they, right, they reiterated to the public that it's going to make them safer, because what this is doing is making it impossible for the Nazis, or, you know, the Russians to see them from overhead. What they're
right.
working on is, yeah, so that right there is enough to give them reassurance.
Yeah, yeah. While they're poisoning them, they say something like this.
Exactly. And that right there, if you take into consideration what had happened back then, and then, you know, throw all that out the window and take a look at what's going on and what's transpiring today.
Yeah.
It's
well,
exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
I mean, the administration is saying, this is what's best for you. We
right.
have a common...
Don't question. Yeah.
Thank you. Don't question. We have a common enemy, and it is these people. Let's go at all of them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then you have the rest of everybody else that's questioning it. Like, okay, hold on. Let's see. Why do we have a problem with them? Like Iran. I'm going to use Iran as a prime example, because I feel as if Iran is doing nothing other than creating or trying to enrich uranium to do nothing more than what the rest of the entire global community is doing.
Okay.
And that is produce nuclear technology so that they can run their entire grid structure, what have you, on nuclear technology. But because
I'm so against the whole thing, but I also... because I'm all for alternative energy, which we could do, but Iran has just as much right as anybody else, and they signed the Non-Proliferation Act.
Yeah.
Which Israel hasn't, but yet the United States is so far up Israel's butt.
Thank you.
You know, it's like, so there is no justice. I mean, that's just a joke.
Right,
but,
it is to me.
Yeah, well, it is. It seems like I don't know, but that's what they're doing there. But what do you know anything that might possibly be going on right now? I mean, besides chemtrails, Monsanto, fracking, poisoning our water. I mean, these are things that a lot of us are aware of. It's too bad more people aren't.
This is one thing, Ruthann. I will sing this song to the day I'm dead. You know, but there is so many people in just America today, right now, that have knowledge of what Monsanto is capable of and what Monsanto has done, and yet they still are free to operate freely as they do.
Yeah.
But how many people, from your opinion, you know what I'm saying, just from your opinion, and how many people you hear talk against them, etc.? I mean, an individual or a corporation.
The percentage is growing. People are waking up. I just wish it would be faster. But I wanted to mention that way back decades ago, and I'm sure that they're using this now. The United States also, it was developing quote-unquote ethnic weapons, because they were studying different ethnic groups, racial groups, to see, you know, the genetic differences.
Yep.
And the DNA variations, so they would know how to target specific cultures.
Yeah.
So, I mean, things like that, we don't even think about. It's not like, well, why would I think about that? But sure. There is.
And we don't.
Well, you've been on some of the Thursday Hammer Down shows. They've talked about MK Ultra. And there evidently was an MK Naomi, which was supposed to be the successor. So we know that that's still going on. We know still happening.
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely. And this is my thing. Like, I might piss a few people off here with what I'm about ready to say, but it is a necessity that it is going to be said, because if you take into consideration the minority of America, every and anybody has had a interaction with somebody that is of a lower class with them. And if you take into consideration that interaction that you have had with said individual, okay, the American populace is so segregated and divided amongst everybody purely based upon the fact that, oh, such and such is better, or such and such holds a better chance of doing this or that for themselves. But if you take and break it down to, you know, the populace or the people that be, it's like we are the exact same. Anybody that is below middle class. This is all I'm saying when it comes to a class type warfare.
The warfare, right, that we should be concerned about is the class warfare, which people don't want to talk about. But you're talking about that. And now this is not, well, I'm going to say this was something that I was reading. What would that be? 20 years ago, I'm 1990.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles, they used 1,500.
Are you talking a riot?
Black and Hispanic babies.
Yep.
They were given that experimental measles vaccine. It had never been licensed for use, and the parents were never informed about it. The Center for Disease Control later said, well, the parents were not informed that. Well, they knew, but they didn't know that it was experimental. So stuff like that is totally immoral. And I don't know if they ever could or did or would bring a lawsuit, but they should have. It used to be that the Center for Disease Control, I believe, was a government agency. I've recently been told that it now has been privatized, of course, because they're trying to privatize everything.
Yeah.
But they also, we want to touch on the fact that a lot of hallucinogens and drugs were used especially during the Gulf War. They were used before, but during the Gulf War, it was they were just doing a lot of experiments on humans intentionally.
Yeah. Do you know about the super hallucinogen known as BZ that was created in 1962 by none other than the CIA, NSA, etc., Alphabet Boys?
I didn't know about it, but no doubt about. I mean.
Oh yeah, it was a super hallucinogen. Like, you know, 70% of hallucinogens come from the earth. It's a naturally occurring product, etc. But the NSA, etc., has created more than.
They take things, but then they alter the structure, and make it much more dangerous. Was there anything that. When you've been researching this now for years, was there any particular incident that just more than they all make you cringe, but was there any one or two that just really had the hackles all raised that you just shudder when you think about?
Yeah, it's actually a code name, Project Chatter. Project Chatter, Project Bluebird, Project Artichoke, and it also coincides with MK Ultra, etc., where they had willingly snatched up CIA operatives, U.S. military operatives, etc., and dosed them with high amounts of LSD and all types. Well, I mean, Operation Midnight Climax, which is one of the names that the CIA had used, they had taken a lot of prostitutes.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, prostitutes to lure in CIA operatives to certain hotel rooms, what have you. And then these prostitutes would dose these CIA operatives with LSD or high amounts of cannabis, what have you. And then there would be individuals behind a mirror watching to monitor, take, you know, would watch what would take place of everything, you know. And,
okay.
And it was...
Well, then, and probably then, like, if one of the guys actually found out what happened and complained, they'd probably offer to blackmail him to his wife or something, if, you know. That
Let's be serious, though. I mean, if you don't know what's going on, I mean, you can't.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was like a sort of a sting kind of, but it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Operation.
Right, look, one thing I do want to bring to your attention, Ruthann, it's slightly off topic, but I had just recently, you know, I'm trying to get a new apartment, and in the process of doing that, I need to have my son's social security card, etc. Okay, so His social security card, because of my move from being stationed out in Fort Lewis, Washington, et cetera, his social security card was kind of jacked up. You couldn't see all the numbers. Yeah. Well, I needed a new social security card. So I called the social security department. And I asked them, I'm like, hey, I need to get a new social security card for my son, this and that. They're like, you need to provide that he has every shot that is mandated by government, up to date, before we will release his social security card. I'm like, hold on.
Shit.
Yeah. What is that? What the fuck is that? They're telling me that I need to have my child vaccinated up to date, etc., before they will release his social security card.
Mercury and all these other toxins in him. I mean, they should just give the card to you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's horrid. I know. Actually, today I was with a friend who was saying that there was no way that she was going to take, you know, if they came and said you have to take this shot, blah 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 blah, because you know you have you are supposed to have some kind of rights. Because I was saying that some military people had sued because they had been either forced or discriminated against because they wouldn't.
It was the executive order placed upon soldiers from the Clinton administration. And yeah, that was another thing I meant to say.
It has nothing to do with the military, but one of my relatives is going to lose her job at the end of the year because she refuses to get the flu shot.
Really?
Yeah, and because they let her go this long, but they came out with this thing for at the beginning of the year, you must have it, so she will be without a job. Because she said she's not going to put that into her body. She's smart enough to know.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean,
you know,
like, seriously, who tells you that...
You can't get a social security card until...
Thank you. And that's what this country operates off of, is you have to have a social security card or you can't do anything, right? But they tell me. They told me, I called and talked to them. I wish I would have recorded that conversation, seriously, because it was like... I need a new social security card for my son because, you know, I had lost it in the move, etc. I'm a soldier. I had left from Washington. Yeah. And they're like, well, you need to bring us an updated shot record and make sure that he is clear. And yeah, yeah, I'm like, so I can't get his social security card unless his shot record's up to date? And they're like, no, you can't. I'm like, I thought a social security card was a social security card. If you lose it,
right.
If you need a new one, you get it.
They force you to have it. So,
right.
I mean, no, I okay, that's a new one. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I'm going through right now, and that, you know, mind-boggling. I'm like, okay, so, and then I went to, you know, the doctors that I had set up here in the local area. I had went to them, and I'd ask. I was like, I need some form of paperwork that states, you know, my son is cleared so that I can get a social security card for him. And they printed out this paper.
Right.
And I didn't think nothing of it because they had printed it out and was like, oh, it's fine, go ahead. So I get out to my car and I'm looking at it and I'm like, it says he still needs, you know, a couple of shots before he's cleared to be okay because the shot record that I have is not valid. So I'm like, hold on. So I go right back in to the health department and they're like, oh no, we just do that because it's so close to their birthday and we'll do this and yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll see how that pans out when I go to the Social Security office. Well, lo and behold, I go to the Social Security office and they're like, no, this isn't going to work. This will not suffice because he doesn't have the shots that are necessary.
An attorney that, like, knew, you know, attorneys are in niches. And I wish I knew somebody who had, you know, this kind of knowledge because I think this is just appalling. But, Charlie, we totally got off track, which is fine.
I know, I know. I'm sorry.
No, honey, it's fine. I want to thank you so much. And I will post the rents.com on Air Marte Fio radio page. And I really suggest that people look at this. It doesn't bring us right up to 2012. It stops in the 1990s. But you can see and know that things are not better. They're worse as far as what the government is doing behind our back to us. So, Charlie, thank you so much. And good luck with this Social Security number thing. That's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, no, it is ridiculous. And you know what? I'm going to record every and any type of transference between whoever
you
have to do.
The other calls definitely do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will. Just to show how ridiculous it really is.
But we will talk again, and I thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Ruthann.
Okay. Bye bye.
However, you have a good one.
And now we have Raymond Lane on Palestine.
Good afternoon. How is everybody doing today?
It's autumn.
Today,
right?
Lots going on over in the West Bank, and they killed a couple Israeli soldiers this week, or last week. One was lured by a Palestinian who has had a brother in custody, Israeli custody, with no charges. And when the guy tried to resist, he was killed by the people that tried to kidnap him, the brother of the brother that's in prison. Caused a huge crackdown in Hebron. And then the second one was walked during a big demonstration. One was walking and was shot and killed, and he was a soldier. And they say he was killed by a sniper. Well, I don't know if anybody knows anything about Hebron, but Hebron is 35 to 40,000 Palestinians and 500 Israelis. Whew. The Palestinians have been completely disarmed. If they own a steak knife or a butcher knife larger than 8 inches long, they go to jail. They don't have weapons. They went and destroyed the village after this kid was shot, and found a couple of hunting rifles. I can only imagine they're very small caliber single shot, but both people went to jail for that. And I don't see how
this could be a false flag type thing. I mean, this could be one.
That's where I'm going with this. That's where I'm going with this. The peace process is moving along, albeit not anything that I consider a peace process, but what it is what it is. I don't have control over that. But, you know, Yitzhak Rabin was freaking assassinated. Anytime anybody makes consolations, they start doing this. Also, Netanyahu likes to do collective punishment, which is against international law. And what started all this is the Ibrahim Mosque and Tome of the Patriarch was assaulted by settlers that were guarded by soldiers. And then the settlers not only went into the mosque and were, you know, provoking Palestinians, but then they were also attacking homes in the area, chopping down their trees in their yard and tearing up their plants. And then today they took over a house and really hurt a bunch of people and took over the roof of this house. They tried to take over one house and were thwarted by the occupants. So then they just turned around. These people are just mobs of people mobbing neighborhoods. In anywhere in the world, these people would be shot and killed on sight by the military. But because they're Jewish and because they're of their biblical claim to the town of Hebron, we got a problem, freaking people. It's one of the hottest places and one of the most racially divided places in all of the West Bank. Mostly streets are forbidden. The Palestinians are forbidden from walking down the streets. And
but
they shut down the center.
Israelis there. You're saying there's only 500 Israelis and about 35,000 Palestinians?
500 Israelis directly in the center of the city, protected by the fifth largest military in the world. And they are armed to the teeth. If you go to YouTube and look up Hebron settlers, you will see them jogging through the streets past Arabs with M16 strapped to their backs. They're not military. They're settlers. So the settlers are armed to the teeth. They disarmed the 30,000 strong Palestinian population so they can continue to just trash and harass and shoot and kill and maim and anything they want to do without any type of recourse and without any fear of being hurt when you go in on these operations. This is going to be one of the hottest contested areas for a peace plan. I really believe that. And I think that they're going to, I don't know this for fact, and please don't take my word on this. This just could cause World War III. That Abbas is crazy enough to trade Jerusalem to try to get those settlers out of Hebron. But if they try to get those settlers out of Hebron, it will be World War III. So if they take Jerusalem, the Arabs will go absolutely apeshit everywhere in the world.
Yes. No,
and if Palestinians take Hebron, the Jews will go absolutely apeshit everywhere in the world.
Jerusalem is supposed to be the holy city for three religions, and they really need to keep it that way.
Correct. Well, so is Hebron, and not a lot of people talk about Hebron, but Hebron has a lot of biblical sites as well.
But it's just not.
And they're animated about it. I mean, the Tomb of the Patriarch and the, you know. I don't know if anybody knows about this, but then in the 80s, there was a murder there. They went in, they killed all these Muslim worshipers worshiping there. And what happened? They divided the mosque in half and gave Israelis half of it for the murder. Came in, murdered a bunch of Palestinians, and then that's what they did. They punished
like
the Palestinians again.
Oh, no. I'm just shaking my head. It's like,
all this is in history.
No sense.
You know, why do they why do they call, you know, why do they call Israel apartheid? You know, what if the rights of a Jewish cab driver have that a Palestinian Knesset member doesn't? Well, let me read some of these. There's more than 30 main laws discriminating against Palestinian citizens of Israel. These are the Palestinians that are Israeli citizens. So we're not even talking about people in Gaza. We're talking about people in the West Bank. And numerous new racist and discriminatory bills are at various stages of legislation. Examples include the Law of Return, 1950, allowing Jews all over the world to become Israeli nationals. And the Nationality Law, 1952, applies only to Jews and privileged Jewish immigration, while non-Jewish Palestinians are denied the right of return stipulated in UN Resolution 194. UN Resolution 194 said those people that were removed from their property should be able to come back. Well, there's no properties to come back to because they bulldozed, destroyed, burned, and then built a forest over top of it. Under the Family Reunification Law, an Israeli Jew who marries a non-Israeli can bring their spouse into the country. Palestinians who marry a non-Israeli cannot grant their spouse Israeli citizenship or residency. That's been causing a lot of problems for a lot of years, and it's getting even worse. I guess the amount of people that are able to come in it's slowly dwindling. And so it's almost non-existent that even happens.
Yeah. A Palestinian friend of mine lives in Scotland, and his family's just scattered, and he can't go back to Palestine. They won't let him in.
Right.
But he's home, but he can't go back. So.
No, if the house is even standing, that would be the lucky thing.
That house I'm sure isn't, yeah.
Yeah, or, that's the thing.
Jewish people have taken it over. I mean, the Zaire.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, or it's just a big settlement block. Now it's not even anything that looked like before.
Yeah.
So the Jewish National Fund, they're an Israeli land administration. They operate solely for the interests of the Jewish people. They own most of the land, occupied land, supposedly own. I say that very loosely.
Yeah.
It is stated that the JNF is not the trustee of the general public in Israel. Its loyalty is given to the Jewish people in the diaspora and in the state of Israel. The JNF, in relation to being an owner of the land, is not a public body that works for the benefit of all citizens of the state. The loyalty of the JNF is given to the Jewish people, and only to them is the JNF obligated. The JNF, as the owner of the JNF land, does not have a duty to practice equality towards all citizens of the state. The Israeli Land Administration controls 93% of public land in Israel. So they can just give and parcel out and sell, and this is all occupied land.
93%. So even an Israeli, I'm not talking about Zionists, but just a nice Israeli family who supposedly owns their property, they really don't?
That's the way it appears.
Wow.
Yeah, they may not own it, but they control it.
But you know what?
So they can say, we're going to put a freeway through here, so you all got to go.
But they do that here. So that's not
they
different.
They do that here. But yeah, they do that here some.
Eminent domain, they can just take land. They supposedly give you what it's worth, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But unfortunately, JNF works very closely with the settler people, so then they plant a tree, and then they say, oh, there was no people here, land without people. Oh, it must be yours. Right. You planted a tree. Okay, here you go. So, and then they come in and they tear down all the trees and bulldoze the whole land for things like museums and of tolerance. I love that one, too.
Yeah, museum of tolerance. That makes me just
they built them. The Israelis have the Museum of Tolerance built on stolen occupied land in East Jerusalem. Gotta love that.
I talk about iron.
That's bad. I want to go see it, but I don't know if I can even do it without really losing my brain.
I don't want you in over there because I think you might do something we wouldn't see you again.
I don't know what I would do until I was put in that position. I don't know. I'd probably be scared shitless and probably not do a whole lot of anything. probably be a lot bigger bark than bite. Because I was, you know, I went to a class and I was told that they didn't want to take me because I was a little bit too upset and a little bit too freaked out about it. And, you know, they said, if you don't make it through the airport, how many people do you help? And it's none. So if you don't play the game and you don't, you know, try to use their psychology against them and try to do like my friend Nancy did when she goes to the airport and gives them a hard time, but only to a point where she knows she can get away with it, you know, then you're not helping anybody. So you almost have to bite your tongue just so you know you can get in and you know you can go on.
You have to do a lot of
what it's about.
Meditating and really self-discipline to get yourself in.
You just have to go be you just have to be weaselier than the largest weasels on earth. Mm-hmm. That's all. You just have to play the game, you know. That's all.
Yeah.
So, the state legislated. Okay, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you're going to go, and if you're on Facebook, you need to get a different page, because I've heard that they will.
All my friends shut their pages down. They just completely just take them offline, so that they can't be accessed. They usually set up dummy emails so they can't be accessed, and have people, especially if they have people in Israel, which is awesome. They have them write them emails welcoming them to Israel and things like that. So just totally candy coated. You know, if they want to try doing this, we have ways of getting in. Problem is when you try to get in more than one time. You know, you go in for one time for a month, okay, but, well, you know, how can you continue to go back to follow up on projects and things like that? That's where they make it very difficult. You know, you start to recognize that you're not going to Jerusalem again, are you? You know, it's sad that it's the way it is. It's the only country in the world like that, as far as I know. I mean, if anybody knows of a country like that, I'd love to know who it is.
Yeah, me too.
That's pretty crazy. So the state legislated educational curriculum. First of all, they don't build schools for Palestinians. That just doesn't happen. Second, that's incredibly crowded because of it. They go to school in three shifts. Meanwhile, back at the ranch over there with the Israeli two settlers, they have brand new kindergartens with pools and water features. And okay, but this is just like good old Adolf Hitler, and they don't like to be described like that. But you know what? Let's just call it the way it is.
If the shoe fits.
Anyway, the shoe's fitting on this, at least. The state legislated educated curriculum sets objectives for state schools that privilege Jewish history and ban the study of Palestinian culture or history. Now, didn't Hitler ban the culture of Jewish history? Didn't he do that? That sounds familiar.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay. Commemorating the Nakba is restricted in Israel. While the country has a Holocaust Museum, Holocaust Memorial Day, and multiple memorials to Jewish European history, Al-Nakba, Arabic for catastrophe, is the commemoration of the displacement of 800,000 Palestinians and the destruction of 513 villages in 1947 and 1948. They did that in 1 year. That is crazy.
Oh,
and that was so they could be founded a Jewish state on historic Palestine. 1 year, 800,000 people either killed or disrupted, and 513 villages gone.
Very busy, very dreadful, despicable year. There's no words for it.
Well, just and they did everything they could, from killing to maiming to scaring to poisoning to you name it, they did it. You want to see a terrorist, just read about the Nakba, and you'll get to know who the very first terrorist ever was, and it wasn't an Arab, it was a Jew.
Yeah.
The Nakba Negev Desert, as everybody knows, they're uprooting all these people, these nomadic Bedouins that have been farmers for their whole life. They've spent a lot of time trying to build institutions without any help from the Israelis, because the Israelis won't allow them to run power, won't allow them to run water, won't allow them to build new structures. And this last week, they didn't even allow the Red Cross or the NGOs from Europe to come and help them rebuild their tents in the village.
Right.
So they're scouring the land. They're scouring the land of the Negev. They're trying to say again, you know, land with no people. And then they're going to build Jewish settlements as far as the eye can see.
Blaine, didn't they attack some of the Red Cross people or the NGO people?
Yeah.
I mean, my...
Who cares? The governments, who cares? The governments don't care. They, you know, that French woman was yanked out of a truck by her hair and drug onto the ground, and then they drove off with all this stuff that the French government paid for. But they don't care. They're like, well, you know, it's Israel. Well,
yeah,
they have nukes. They could end our existence.
Oh.
You know, it's what? These people have had their village destroyed now 52 times, and they continue to stay there. And
well,
this is constant harassment by the military, constant harassment by settlers, constant harassment by anybody you can think of. And another thing about the Bedouins is, of all of the Palestinians, they were the ones that helped the Israelis the most. They were their scouts. They were their Arab-speaking interpreters. They were the ones during all this that helped them. And now this is the thanks they give. And that just makes me say that they're the evilest people on earth because they don't care. No, we'll use you till there's no use for you, and then it's just time to get rid of you.
Yeah. Well, you know, Serena said that...
My mom makes me different.
Well, she spent a week here and there when she lived in Israel with some of the Bedouins, and she said they were just wonderful, just very welcoming, and really, really nice people. But
yeah, and as you go to bed at night on your soft pillow, you can know that they are sleeping under the weather with children and livestock and no way to really keep everything in or keep everything safe. And you know, they won't allow them to put their tents back up. And if the Prower plan passes, which I imagine it's going to, it's going to see another Nakba, and 100,000 people are going to be displaced from that land and put in large ghettos that they built that they say that's to integrate them into the Israeli society. As we know, that's such bullshit.
Right.
How they can even say that is just drives me crazy, because when you try to tell people that don't know about this stuff, they say, well, they're helping them. They're giving them schools and a warm place to sleep. And no, they're giving them a crime-ridden, nowhere to work, no plumbing, very little electricity,
and
what is there is dangerous.
And just beating them down. But you mentioned the livestock. Did you see this week? There was a picture going around about it showed the Palestinian, several of the men standing there with a bunch of dead sheep from poisoned water.
Yeah, they chemical weapons, like I talked about last week. Chemical weapons, biological weapons. They're pouring the stuff into the only well where the people drink from that well too. So the animals are drinking from it, of course, and it killed all the sheep. But now, what do the people do for water too?
Yeah,
and so they lose their flock. They lose their well, and these settlers that you can see, you know, a mile away, armed to the teeth, just staring over the hill, smiling at you. You just want to kill them. I mean, I can't imagine the rage that must go through them. Or maybe there isn't rage anymore. Maybe there's just numbness now.
There has to be.
I would be numb.
I think
they wonder why they kidnap a soldier and kill him. You know, gee, I can't imagine why you got a chance to do that, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about the two soldiers that they killed, and they destroyed all these villages, and they went all crazy on them. But they didn't talk about, you know, and that made the news and national news and here in America and all this crap. But they don't talk about the 11 Palestinians that were killed just in the last 2 weeks by Israeli occupation soldiers and by settlers. They don't talk about anything about that. Nothing about the execution style murders that they commit. They don't talk about that. 11 people, and now 2 people get killed, and it's this huge international incident.
It's a big thing, and now we're really going to get those crazy Palestinians.
Well, that's what they do, and they're like, okay, fine, we're going to take back over that house that it took them 10 years to get rid of the settlers. And they finally got a court order and got him out in April. And now Netanyahu's saying, the hell with it, reoccupy that home.
Yeah,
so now they're going to kick out all these 40 people again.
And then
the people can't go to the mosque there because that house is right there by the mosque, and then they harass, shoot at, throw rocks at, throw fecal matter at, whatever they got, they'll throw it and make sure that no Muslims will come up there. So,
really?
Yeah, it's divided into two, but it's not. They can't use the mosque.
No, you can't divide a house of worship. No.
Wow, isn't that it? Well, you could if there are people who are at peace.
Well, right, like in the old days when they actually did get along, that would have been a different...
There are countries that are like that, where they don't have a lot of money, so they don't have a lot of building space, and they'll have, church services and mosque services in the same building.
Oh. But everybody's okay. But now when you're talking about settlers,
criminals that are God's chosen people. God gave me this land. Man, these people
God's
are freaking mental
people.
Hospital patients.
Yeah.
And I feel I have a hard time saying that because I respect my mentally ill people more than I respect these people. These people are seriously mentally ill. Really bad mentally ill. So fanatical and just. There's no room in this world for that. They talk about all these Muslim extremists that do all this crap and talk about how horrible it is and we need to exterminate that from the planet and all that. Well, what about Zionism? What about settlers? Let's get rid of extremism. Let's get extremism all the way to the root and get rid of everything extreme.
Yeah.
Because you can't pick on one and not the other. I mean, I don't agree with the Kafaris and Salafi Wahhabis. I don't agree with them one bit. I hate them just as much as I hate Zionists. But at least I know that there's they're the same.
Well,
if people heard me say that Zionism and Wahhabism is the same, they would freak out. Well, a woman can drive. If you're Jewish, you can.
No, Wahhabis, I think, are crazy. I mean, I just think they're so fanatical. But the Zionists are, too. So... I don't see the difference. It's just like that idiotic person in Florida in the United States that...
That Christian nut football of it. Yeah. Oh, same thing, Jesus hates fags, all that crap, and stuff like that.
Yeah, West Brook.
Like what? And then come to find out he was gay all along. Whatever. This world, it's going to go to hell if the good people of this world don't get a handle on things. Because the 1% sure got us running scared and doing all kinds of weird stuff. And when we should just turn around and say, wait a second, we're hosed.
They want
No, of course they do.
Divisiveness.
Of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What, the 1%, they increase their wealth 34%, while the rest of the population decreased by 6. Well, if you decrease someone's wages by 6% and you're already not hardly making it, you're not going to be very happy. They're talking about the recession being over and getting rid of food stamps and all that. Come on, people. If one thing we got to do is take care of each other, and that's the one thing. But why do we got to have 700 military bases around the world? Why do we have to have cruise missile ships sitting out there idling, spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars staring at Syria? What are we doing? I mean, if you're going to spend this money, why aren't we spending it at home?
Our people are losing jobs. The kids are going to bed hungry. On and on. But yet we have plenty of money to go kill children in other countries.
Yeah, that way we don't have to feed them, I guess. I guess that's their rationale. I don't really know what their rationale is, but I'm beginning to wonder.
And that's what I said months ago or last year, whatever, when we were doing some horrid shit in Somalia. Not that we stopped, but it's like, what? These people aren't starving to death fast enough? You've got to go in there and mow them down?
And look what it cost, the Nairobi mall shooting this week.
Mm-hmm.
That's horrible, but you know what? What do you expect? You got these kids, they got nothing. They got nothing. Al-Shabaab means youth in Arabic. Youth. These are kids. But they have nothing to live for.
But a lot
they're
of
hungry,
people
they're thirsty, their land, their water's been polluted by all the ships that went through there. The freaking corporations completely stripped their country of all its resources, took their government out, and then left them hanging. And the people that were trying to make the country work, the Al-Shabaab, they just devastated them.
Yeah, they haven't had a government there, a rule since 1990, I believe, in Somalia. And no, but see, you've got the connection. A lot of people didn't understand what the mall shooting in Kenya was about. They didn't get the background. They didn't understand that.
Because nobody looks further than the story.
Further than the story, people.
When you see something on the news, look it up and find out the history behind it. And look and see what happened in Somalia. Even 6 months ago, you might find an incident that pissed them off enough to make them do this.
I mean, I actually was one of the people that was, and on one of the shows I do, we do some news sometimes, and I was always like hitting on that because I thought Somalia was really getting the shaft, and I'm not the only one thought, I guess. But Blaine, I want to thank you, and Sarit's going to talk some more about what's going on there.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And just, God... No, you just came in this time with a lot of depressing stuff. So, I love you.
Well, you know, I don't usually come with the happy, unfortunately. But, you know, right now in Palestine, things aren't happy. So, I want to say hi to Ishraq Ayub in Gaza. She's doing really well, and they're doing everything they can to survive. They're down to 6 to 8 hours of electricity a day now. Tunnels have shut everything down. Everybody, if you got friends in Gaza, try to send them some supplies. Try to get whatever you can get to them if you have connections to do so. Things are getting pretty bad out there. So she just wanted to, you know, let everybody know that they're all there, 1.8 million of them, but they're all starving, and it's a salty day. So you all have a great evening, and Sarit, it's up to you to tell us what's going on the Israeli side. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Blaine.
That was great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, God. It just, there's so much news and so much of it isn't good. But go ahead, Sarit. What do you have for us?
There is a little good on the Israeli activist side.
Okay.
I was going to talk a little bit and talk about hope, because it seems pretty hopeless, especially right now. So there are people who are doing schools that teach both Arabic and Israeli, Hebrew, and both religions, and there's 5 of those schools in Israel right now. People are funding it from all over the world.
Individually, right? I mean, it's not government's not doing anything with it.
And the wonderful schools, I watch them on the videos. I should... post a link to the website on Sarit Jacobson's wall on Facebook or Daily Life in Palestine on Facebook.
Okay.
I talk about those a lot.
I put it on Aramark if you do. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will send you a link to it. Those schools are my hope. The children that were talking in the interviews were so happy and cheerful to be together. We're cousins, not enemies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk in Israel about revolution, but they're divided over the Palestinian issue. They all want socialism, that they all agree on almost, but the Israeli media is lying to them so much about what's going on. I actually went to some Israeli media sites that I hate just to see what they're saying, and I was shocked, and it was very upsetting. They take stories and make up stuff and then say the Palestinians are making up everything we see.
Yeah.
That nothing is true. And they even take videos that International Solidarity Movement does, for example, and put the video up and explain and make up whole stories about how it cannot be true.
Mm.
They're saying the footage from cast lead is from Syria. All kinds of strange lies.
Well, their propaganda is really something.
It's a lot like American, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
But worse, yeah. I feel like it's a little America.
I think it probably is a little bit worse. I think, but yeah, people just, and that's what Blaine was saying, people need to research what they hear on mainstream media. Don't take their words.
Absolutely. For example... They're talking in Israel about the new president of Iran, They're saying the president of Iran, I'm translating from Hebrew, was saying that he wants peace, that Iran is not interested in nukes, and that the Holocaust actually has been a terrible crime against humanity. What do you think? Guess what they think?
What?
Comment from 3 hours ago says, I will never trust an Arab, even if they're 40 years in the ground. Comment after that, do not trust Arab. He is a liar. He is a disgusting human. He is the trash and the juice of the trash.
Well,
another person.
Netanyahu, right? That would be my description of him. So, okay.
Yeah, oh. And they're talking about the president of Iran. Very strange how much they hate him.
Well, because
instead of
being lied to, I mean, they actually believe what the Israeli puts out.
Yeah, it's actually better than Fox News, because Fox News, I know when they're lying. With the Israeli media, you have to actually do the research.
Okay, well,
they're smarter than they appeal for all kinds of intelligence.
I did hear recently that they, I mean, we knew that, you know, for a long time, Israel's been funding people to screw up Facebook and other social media. But a few weeks ago, I saw that they had hired more, especially college students, to get on Facebook and, you know, just try to, spread their lies, and if they can hack us, to do it, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. It's the way to put yourself through college, right?
Absolutely, especially in a very hard economic time.
Yeah. That blows my mind.
So there's been protests in Israel all the time. I heard that some people protested cast lead with bloody clothes, and it was very dramatic, and the high court let them go today. They were going to punish them, but the high court protected them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Yeah, I wonder
And they're making... Yeah? That's a big step.
Yeah, it's like, why did the high court protect them? Wow.
I think they're afraid of the UN. Or international court. And I saw another beautiful thing that this Israeli activist friend did. His name is Guy Butavia. He's got an organization called Tayush, T-A-U-S-H, I think. We'll share that too. Anyway, he saw a settler going over somebody's land with a bulldozer. So he called the IDF and said that guy's not supposed to be here, and the IDF kicked out that settler.
Really?
Yeah, that was beautiful to watch. I just saw that this morning. I'm subscribed to his YouTube channel, Guy Butavia. Recommend subscribing to his YouTube channel. He does holy work.
Oh my God. The IDF settler. Wow, that was a first. Oh, God. That's good news. I mean, that's just exciting.
Yeah, we need more Israeli activists like that, because there is some good and bad people fighting, and we need people to stop giving up and get in the fight. Small things like talking about it in the grocery store, though, more than you ever imagined, especially in public places. Everyone can... I talk out loud so the whole supermarket can hear me.
Yeah, I do that with... because there's a lot of things to learn she doesn't know. And so, man, I'm more than happy to do it when we're in public.
We need to break that. People think it's not cool to talk about politics. So everywhere we go, me and Michael talk about politics.
Sure. Well, you know, they used to say... here, and I'm sure you've heard it, that like when you're in a public social situation, you should never talk about sex, religion, or politics. And I think those are the only things really worth talking about. I love to talk to people about any of those. So,
me too.
vocal
Me
about
too.
It.
It's most fun.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But
you also, another thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the Tayush people that I really follow closely went to this protest in a village called Susia that is being ethnically cleansed in the West Bank. And while they are driving there in a bus, army gets on the bus and tells them to get off the bus and checks everything they have. And they want to see the signs for the protest. And it was really funny seeing them go through the signs for the protest.
Oh.
And Guy Butavia says, why? And they say, we want to make sure there's no hate speech. That's really ironic. So they drive 5 more miles, get stopped in another checkpoint. We're talking about Israeli activists who want to show solidarity. They had to go through 2 military checkpoints that stopped them for a long time. Then they arrive in some place and they say, no, the road is closed. But all these settlers are driving down the road. They say, why can't we drive with them? We're Israeli too. No, you can't. So they walked for hours and they got there.
Oh.
And it's so funny because in the video you see the Palestinian old man coming to greet them, happy to see, like he's seeing his son or something. So
yeah.
It's so funny how much we have a bond and the
yeah.
Army gets pissed off by our bond.
Okay. But that was very touching. I mean, the old man coming out to greet them, like.
Yeah, wow. I'll send you that. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Also from Guy Butavia.
From
he
Guy.
He's doing
okay.
great work.
Yeah.
Him and the Tayush activists. They're all doing amazing work. But I follow it closely. I don't know why. I just.
Well, I mean, because you get good news from him. I mean, it's because we need the
good
news.
Yeah, it's nice to see the good news.
Yeah.
Because there's so much bad news. It's just life there is hell. Everything Blaine said is absolutely true. The Bedouin have been living on that land for about 50 years and farming. Even though they're nomadic people, they decided to stay there because
the
army doesn't like them being very nomadic and roaming. It's dangerous.
Yeah,
so
but
they
you
got
know,
villages. Now they're
they
being sent to the worst neighborhood in a city where there's poverty.
Well, of course. I mean, they're not going to send them to any place nice. Because would just, I mean, like the Zionists would just assume they would all kill it themselves, but they're not going to. And, no, they're not going to send them to any place nice. And people say, well, why don't they leave? Well, where do they have to go? I mean, there's no place for them to go. So now they're being rounded up and put somewhere, another concentration camp.
I'm also worried about the Sudanese refugees that are escaped to Israel. They're in terrible conditions in camps. I heard testimonies of rape and there's an Israeli guy who tied himself to that fence and is on hunger strike for about 10 days. There's a lot of... I didn't know there's so many good people. Every bad story has many good people trying to stop it. I think what we need is a little more people and we can win.
Yeah, I think we're going to. I'm very optimistic.
Only we could gain all the people that say it cannot be done. Because those people wish it can be done.
yeah. I mean,
because together we can do anything.
Yeah. But the pessimists are sending out, like, negative energy. And then we have to fight the negative energy.
Yeah, I get a lot of that. And I don't blame them. I get sad. But then we have to just get up and do it all over again.
Well, right. I mean, and we are human. And, yes, we're going to get sad. And, yes, we're going to cry. And be depressed. And, yes, and then we get up and start again. Continue on. That's the way
it
works.
I really blame capitalism. The fact that there is someone profiting on war will never... They don't have incentive to stop the wars. So they're fighting the peace activists, and it all comes from capitalism.
Right. Well, right.
Damn.
Because like in the United States, it's more than 50% of the money in the States goes toward the military. But
oh, my God.
you know, we
are waste.
Go to bed hungry. People are losing their jobs. People are moving in with relatives.
And going to bed hungry is very painful. I have done that a few times in my life, and I'll tell you, it is.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who hasn't done it? I don't know. I guess some people are lucky.
I think so. I mean, I actually have a couple times, but not on a continual basis like, you know, people are now.
I hear in Tennessee it's a huge problem. I used to know someone that told me he went to bed hungry as a child every night.
Yeah. I mean, and then can you imagine what their parents are going through? Because most parents do love their children, and they would do anything for their children to have food and a roof and clothes, you know, and to see them without. I mean, that'd be so demoralizing.
It is. That's what my friend from Afghanistan is saying, that he can't afford to feed his children.
Yeah, my God.
And I blame capitalism, because that country is a rich country that's being robbed by the 1%.
Yes, definitely. I mean, that was the whole thing about going to Afghanistan, is to steal the resources. And also to make sure that, because when the Taliban was in control, there was about, what did they say? The Taliban got maybe 10% of the income from the poppies, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, the Taliban is against doing the poppies. But yet now we have United States military guarding poppy fields. And people, if you don't know, this
stupid.
Is where opium comes from. And, I mean, you can see these pictures. They're online. I mean, that is just disgusting, because the alphabet agencies have always, for the United States, have always made money off of drugs. So the drug war is just another thing to, you know, use up our tax money and make money for the corporations. It's the way it works.
Absolutely. It sure doesn't work, because look at Europe.
Yeah.
People are welcome to research how it works to legalize drugs in Switzerland.
Well,
they're doing really well there.
In the Netherlands? Also, they say that there's something, though, in Amsterdam, you have to be a resident. I mean, there's something, they put a couple restrictions on some, I don't know if it was crack or meth maybe, that kind of, they've got a couple restrictions on something. That's more of a recent thing. But no, this country isn't going to legalize all drugs, because too much money is made. And remember, we have more people in prison per population than any country in the world. And our
absolutely.
Prisons, well, our prisons are privatized, and that means, you know, corporations own them. Corporations' first mission is to make a profit. So they're the ones that lobby around for like three times you're out kind of thing, because they have to have them filled for their shareholders to make money. So they have to have them like 90-95% filled. And so that's why they're lobbying for all kinds of things to be a crime, so they can throw more people in prison. And so drugs, I mean, we're not about to see that legalized, because most of the people in prison are for having small amounts of some kind of drug. I mean, a high percentage.
And they make 200 a day of each prisoner in the CCA, I heard, around 200 a day. We calculated it in Occupy Nashville. We had a guy that came out of prison 30 years, and he was crying and talking about it. So it's all personal now.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's been in jail 30 years.
Somebody. Yeah. Well, and now they
And what a nice man. I'd let this man babysit my daughter. He is the kind of man you just feel at ease with, and he's been in jail.
Yeah.
I didn't even ask why, because I knew it was probably over nothing.
Yeah, well, that's it. He was just one of those unfortunate ones that, yeah.
On the other hand, they don't take rape seriously.
No, isn't that funny? That the things that are really real crimes against the human spirit, the human soul, they don't really
care.
Oh, it
amazes
really,
me.
Yeah, That doesn't matter. I mean, if you get time, you might get a couple years, maybe, maybe, out with good behaviors. I mean, it's just like, just minimize those kind of
talking about private prisons. I was just sharing an article about this prison in Texas where the guard was abusing the females, raping them and filming it and all kinds of nasty things. Luckily, he got caught, but the damage has been done.
Right, right. Well, see, that's it. I mean, yeah, luckily he was caught, but it, you know, because damage like that doesn't just get turned around. It's like, oh, well, okay, he's caught. We're all good now.
Yeah. It angers me.
Yeah.
How much, I think sometimes those kind of things can get worse with age. As you get older, they bother you more. Instead of, certain pains don't go away.
Yeah, well, I think as we get older, we can see, because we've got experience in different ways and we know more people, and we can see the long-term damage.
Absolutely.
That it does. And that's just...
I feel damaged from growing up in Israel in an occupying society that even the Israeli people suffer because what they do to them, they will do to you.
Yeah, see?
It's surreal. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like you yourself know about just being groped in the middle of the street by Israeli soldiers. And so and you're an Israeli citizen. Well, you were a citizen and everything living there. So then you can imagine what they would do to the Palestinian women if they get half a chance.
Oh, yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's...
Only the Palestinian women can get away with it. With me, I can go to the police and get
right.
them in jail.
Right.
A few years sentence in jail for it.
Yeah. But you're right. If they'll do it to you, their own, you know, quote unquote, their own people, then you know that for people that they've been taught to hate. I mean,
I'm afraid to think what they'll do to people that they were taught to hate. Yes, especially when it's a beautiful young woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or any young woman. All women are beautiful. Fuck that.
All women are beautiful in some way, and all men are. I mean. You know, but humans are just so fascinating and so wonderful. And then we have some of these really bad apples, but we can't concentrate on them. We have to concentrate on them to get rid of them and to undo what they do. But, I mean, we have to keep seeing the beauty in people, too.
Yes, if you go to any peace festivals, you see a lot of beautiful, kind people. So
yeah, you just went to one last weekend.
Yeah, I was reminded how beautiful we can be.
Yeah.
Everyone was very nice. I was just selling jewelry there, and I could just walk away from the stall and not worry, you know.
Yeah, I love that. That's the way it is at the festivals I go to. I mean, when there's slow times and all, the vendors just walk away. And it's like, well, is anybody here, you know, and then the vendor next to him says, oh, yeah, he'll be back, whatever, or if you want, I'll take the money, or, you know, I mean, whatever, and it's just
exactly.
Awful. You know.
Yeah, other vendors were, we didn't ask for any cakes or anything, but other vendors were bringing us food, and I was giving them earrings in return. It was great. We had a flotilla speaker. A lot of people were on the flotilla to Gaza. They're very traumatized by it. It was a very harsh night.
Yes.
Watch their friends get killed. I'm glad they're still speaking out and people want to hear.
Yes. Oh, I am glad. I mean, it's been over 3 years now. Excuse me. And
that is what really shook us up. I remember.
Yeah. That was
Israel is such a holy cow. They have lobbies in every country, from France to Germany to England, USA. Just Google it, check it out. They're abusing their own people really bad, not just the Palestinians. Right. Holocaust survivors are eating out of trash cans. They have no heat. People are suffering hunger. homelessness, and the laws that only protect the rich.
Yeah. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like,
it's about 10,000 calls from revolution from each direction, and the government always tries to steal it, like here.
Yeah, wow.
I was talking to an Israeli girl who says that she gets so frustrated trying to go to the revolutionary meetings. There's always people trying to disturb it.
She's
a quiet girl. She just goes and she has a dream, and she comes back and she writes to me all sad because they keep breaking her dream.
Yeah.
Those people are not giving up, so truth will win.
Yeah,
they really aren't.
I think, though, that we're going through those, dying pangs right before the birth pangs. You know, I mean, it's all happening here. That's why we see the most horrid things. And then, like, you're talking about the school. The five, that's hand in hand, right?
Yeah, and it's a big school, all ages, and hundreds of children, and they think that they should live together and even let people return.
Yeah.
It's a big country.
Well, and then you you have them, and you have Guy Batavia and his people. I mean, the checkpoints, and then walking miles and miles to be greeted by this old Palestinian man who was so glad to see him. I mean, you know, things like that.
There's a lot of people like him because Palestine is huge and everyone takes a different spot. Anarchists Against the Wall are doing great work by going to protests on Friday. I know a girl that goes to a protest every Friday in Bil'in, I think.
Yes.
And she says every morning she wakes up on Friday and her heart is like boom, boom,
well, they,
boom.
Well, they get gassed a lot. They get tear gassed and the people
and
get
bullets.
Injured. Bullets. But I know people have been injured by the canisters, which, of course, we must say U.S. on them.
I'll never forget when they shot somebody next to her.
Well, she'll not. I mean, but yeah, she gets up every Friday and heart pounding and goes.
Yeah, Tamimi, they shot Tamimi next to her. I remember that was about a year and a half ago. Tamimi was his name.
I remember, I'm trying to think. There was, and the family. I'm trying to, I might have known about that one. Yeah, it was.
I know she cries a lot. I know they don't cry a lot.
Yes. And that's, I think,
very
that's
hard for them.
A lot of internationals, when they go there, they get in on that Friday one, too.
Yes. It's very dangerous.
Isn't that the one that there's somebody in a wheelchair?
There seems to be someone in a wheelchair.
Because I've seen several of the videos, and I'm sure it's for Berlin, where this man is in a wheelchair. And, I mean, he's in several of them. Yeah.
The Israeli activists get very mad. They have to deal with a lot of fascism. It's very hard for them. Emotionally, it's very tiring.
Yeah. It is. I know. I mean, but we're going to have
and violence against women is on the rise there too.
Well, because because of the anger, and so they take it out on somebody they perceive to be more vulnerable. I think, but that's what
absolutely.
Happening. Yeah, but Sarit, we're going to go, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Okay, great.
Or of
thank
the good
you.
And bad. So
great.
Thank you very, very
thank
much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.